This is the View from the Stands Road to Madrid special on URA.
Welcome along, it's the podcast for View from the Stands. We are previewing the Champions League final. We've had the Liverpool fans come in and give their verdicts. Now it's time for the Spurs fans. We're joined by a year-long veteran, Daniel Henley, Spurs fan and season ticket holder, and my good friend, Kieran Chadron. Welcome along to the show, guys, both Spurs fans, and we're going to be basically breaking down every single game going up until the final, and we're going to kick it off with the group stages. But before we actually get there, Dan, before the Champions League even started, back all the way back at the start of the season, what were your thoughts of the Champions League going into this season? Did you hail it as something that you really wanted to take seriously? Is it something that you really wanted to go for this year? Do you think Spurs would actually get to the final?
Well, I never thought we'd get to the final. I was silently confident about our group. I mean, last year we obviously had a very difficult group with Real Madrid, we beat them. So I wasn't as nervous as a lot of other Spurs fans were. I didn't ever expect us to be in this position, but I thought, yeah, if we get to a quarter final, then I'd be happy with our season, as I'm going to get it next year.
What about you, Kieran?
I don't know. I was not too optimistic about the Champions League, to be honest. Unlike Henley, he looks pretty optimistic about our group, but when I was looking at it, I didn't really think we had much of a chance as well with, you know, teams like Inter and Barca, and I thought maybe we're probably going to end up coming third, which we, you know, nearly did in the end. I was kind of, as a Spurs fan, quite pessimistically, I always kind of just hope for a bit of consistency throughout the season, and kind of always being a Spurs fan, it's always kind of known for being the team that could seem to bottle it towards the end of a season, so I just didn't want that to happen this year. That was the main thing.
So when we all started off in August time, was this a competition that you guys wanted to put? Like, I mean, I know that you could say, okay, put all your eggs in the Premier League basket or in the Champions League basket, and you wanted to win that. Is this a competition that you would have at the start of the season thought, we have a serious chance of winning this, let's give it a massive shot? Or was this sort of a thing that you were just sort of flying at the seat of your pants for basically the whole of it?
I put it in the kind of position where I was like, right, my priority list for the season was FA Cup was the top. I thought that was the most winnable competition. Mm. Then it was the Carabao, whatever it is called, Cup now. Then it was actually the Champions League, then the Premier League. I felt we had more of a chance of winning the Champions League than the Premier League for the reason of over, 38 games, I don't feel Spurs have the consistency. Whereas I feel like at any possible one game off competition, we might actually have a chance of squeezing past someone like we did against City.
Even though that Spurs' record in finals is less
well
than...
when we get to finals, that's the thing. It's just those one-off games, I feel like there is more chance of Spurs fluking it with something.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't trust our consistency over 38 games.
Do you back that, Kieran?
I'll back that as well. obviously I would like consistency from the team, but seeing this season, definitely over the Champions League, it's been very fluky, to say the least, and we've been lucky on many, many occasions.
Especially with the injuries we've had.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely be getting onto that as the podcast goes on. But starting off, you were drawn in what the media was declaring as the group of death. And mind you, Liverpool also, quote-unquote, put in this group of death scenario where they were felt as if they were coming up really, really tough opposition. Liverpool, of course, had the likes of Napoli and Paris Saint-Germain, as well as Red Star Belgrade, whereas you guys had the unfortunate task of going away to Inter, to the San Siro, in your first game in the Champions League. That was a game that you lost 2-1, and then straight afterwards that you were going to play Barcelona. That seemed to be a bit of a daunting task, really. But if we talk a little bit about the Inter game, did you watch the whole of the game, Henley?
Yes, I did, actually. I did watch that game from a pub in Tottenham itself, and I was ecstatic going into the 85th minute, 1-0 up, away at Inter. And then Icardi scored. I was like, okay, I'll take a 1-0 draw, away to Inter. And then some guy called Vecino, who I've never heard of in my life, goes and scores a 92nd minute winner, and I go home upset.
I'm looking at the all of the papers in the way that they do their player ratings for the game that happened. And this is a publication that is done for Inter. It's an Inter reporter. Notably, Handanovic, the goalkeeper for Inter, he had a 5. I think he's the lowest rated. Oh no, Nainggolan actually got a 4.5. He's the lowest rated player for Inter, but not. He was also joint lowest rated on the pitch with Harry Kane. Harry Kane having a bit of a weak performance away from home in Europe.
I think he'd just come back from his first ankle injury of the season, so it was kind of expected. We rushed him back for the Champions League against Inter. It's a big game. And often Kane does disappear in these games, which is kind of why I'm a bit on the fence whether he should start on Saturday. But Eriksen's goal was good. We weren't playing good football that time. We were in good form in the league, but it was really weird in the way that Tottenham were grinding out results, 1-0s, 2-1s, for the majority of the first half of the season. And I thought that was going to be the same in Inter, but unfortunately it didn't pan out that way in the last couple of minutes.
I mean, I remember bits of the game and seeing Harry Kane was probably the most isolated Spurs player on that pitch. He was up front and no one could get any service to him at all. And I think that's often obviously with kind of Kane's reputation, everyone knows that he needs to be isolated because when he does have the ball, he can, he can convert quite well. And I think that was kind of part of Inter's, game plan, is to stop Spurs from being able to play the ball up to them. And I think that was kind of a big part of why Kane really had a poor match as well.
I remember being in town watching this game because it was just on in the pub that I was in. I was just having a drink with my girlfriend. And this was the game after Liverpool had actually beaten Spurs at Wembley earlier on in the season in the league. And I remember me just watching it thinking, I want to know if Spurs are going to be capable of bouncing back here. And for the most part of the game, I actually thought that he was very, very capable for Spurs. And I was thinking, God, Spurs are actually putting on an okay performance. Yes, Harry Kane was very, I think the key word that you said was isolated. But does this really show that the bounce back factor maybe of Spurs, or maybe even the bottle, quote unquote, is something that could be lacking and maybe something that we could look forward to? And we could really analyse when it comes to the final, because it's been a massive question mark over Spurs for a long, long time.
I think, really, it's been weird. This year, our kind of bottle, as say and say, has been a lot better. We had our rough patch in the middle of the season, but kind of towards the end of the season, but it wasn't like we were the only team bottling it. Other teams around us were also kind of throwing in the towel a little bit with the whole Champions League thing, but I'd say our bottle, so and so, has got a little bit better. We did come through against Man City when it looked like we were down and out, when they sort of scored and quite quickly. And the same with Ajax, they put us to the sword in the away fixture and we came back in the second half. So I feel like our bottle has improved. And it is kind of an urban myth that Spurs are these sort of bottle job people. But
you believe that's the case, yeah? Blown a lot more way out of proportion.
It's kind of the way I'd focus it onto Vincent Janssen. And I know this is very rogue, but I feel like Vincent Janssen's reputation comes from Roberto Soldado. It's the kind of players of the past that were very poor.
Yeah.
And then the current team showed a little bit of that, but not all of it. And then there's that they're rubbish, they're bottlers.
Do you think that's the case as well, Kieran?
I don't know. It's just, like I say, I'm a pessimistic Spurs fan, and you always see kind of see that bottling happen all the time. Just, especially over the last, 3 years, 4 years, kind of just been happening non-stop. We're always getting into positions of, where we're, very close to silverware, and we just can't seem to do anything with it in the end. And whether that's the players, not really sure, or whether that's something else, can't really put my finger on it.
I think I'm just unsure how a team can be a bottling team when you're overachievers and you're labelled as overachievers in the media.
Do you think that you have massively overachieved then this year?
100%. Well, we spent no money. We've gone into the same. We had the same problems last year. We haven't improved the team. We're an ageing team. All we've done is cohesed the team a bit.
Well, let's look at the next game, because this will probably bolster your case, really, because losing your first game of the group stage is never a good position, and especially in the way that it happened, never good. I think I know exactly what Kieran's going to say, but I'm going to field the question anyway. 4-2 to Barcelona in the end at Wembley. I think I remember that Messi once again had an absolute masterclass. He's done that many times in the Champions League, not only this season, but most seasons. Kieran, after that game, did you sort of think that it was going to be an almost impossible task to get yourself qualified to the group stage?
I mean, I think there was
to the knockouts.
there is that part of me that definitely thought, just this is it, we're not going to be able to make it through. But then I was kind of also almost thinking Spurs players do kind of enjoy that underdog feeling, and they can pull things out of the bag when they're in the most worst places in their head, in their mindset, they could possibly be, you know, facing two losses in the first two games. I thought, yeah, they probably, likelihood is they might not, you know, qualify from the groups, but I can easily see them, you know, putting all their effort into it and coming, you know, from behind to actually get through.
I'm going to really drop you in it right now, Kieran. Ooh, and I'm going to say that this is something that was going to maybe affect Henley's mood of you. I remember after you'd basically lost this game in the Champions League that you said, I'd much prefer being knocked out and being entered into the Europa League.
Oh, you called me out on that. You know, I think it's one of those things where it's one of those things after you've watched a really rough match of football, and you don't really know where your head is, and I don't know if I can really stand by those words anymore. I think obviously in that period, in that, you know, headset, I was thinking this is just going to become more and more tougher, and I thought, I don't know what I was thinking really, because after seeing, you know, the rest of the season and seeing how we progressed in the Champions League, I guess with me being, I don't know what was going through my head.
I think your argument was, I don't see us winning the Champions League, so I don't really see us having much of a point being in it. So we should go into the Europa League because we have more of a chance of actually winning that.
Yeah, there was a little part of me thinking, you know what? I kind of also look at the long-term plan, and I know you always hear about these things with, you know, Pochettino leaving because he isn't going to get the funding, let alone if he wants silverware as well, and we all want silverware. And I think there's that part of me thinking, let's get into the Europa League, we'll probably be able to get a bit further and have more chance of getting some silverware that way, because at that point I couldn't really see us winning the Premier League, and you know, you're never really sure what happens in, you know, the Carabao Cup or the FA Cup. And I think that was just a bit of a poor mindset to have, but I think that'd be a good idea for us to go into the Europa League.
Can you sort of understand that mindset though, Henley? Because bearing in mind you just lost to Barcelona 4-2, you were at home, Messi had had a masterclass, and you were on 0 points out of six. I know that if I was in that position, knowing if we qualify into the knockout stage, we're going to have to play these lot again. If Messi turns up again and does something like that, you know, there's nothing we can really do. So is there some elements of what Kieran said that you can sort of understand, considering the fact that you just lost 2 out of 2?
Yeah, I can see where he's coming from in that respect, but you've also got to look at it in a financial standpoint. Yes, we may not win something this season, but what if we got 102 million from getting to the final? That's the kind of funding that we need to push on next season, and we want to get ourselves in these positions of... Players are going to look at us like they looked at Liverpool last season as Champions League finalists. Like, you don't get there purely by fluke. You're a good team, you're going to be competitive, and players like that. Players want to be in competitive environments. People aren't going to look at Chelsea and Arsenal this summer and think, wow, Europa League winners. Same reason Sevilla never really gathered a massively amazing team. They won the Europa League a few times, but they're still nowhere to be seen in the Champions League.
I think they won it like a record of 3 or 4 times, like on the bounce.
Yeah, so and they're still nowhere near.
Yeah.
I don't feel like Europa League's a good enough step up. And it's still a competitive thing. You look at the teams that Arsenal and Chelsea have had to beat on the way to the Europa League final. Those teams are easily Champions League quality, and the kind of quality of teams that we've had to beat on the way to the final. So if you don't believe you can't get to the final of the Champions League beating some of the teams that we have, then what makes you think that the Europa League is going to be that easy?
I can see, looking at the actual match report and seeing the way that the goals went in this Barcelona game, it must be very difficult when Coutinho scores in the second minute, and then I remember Rakitic's goal in that game. Absolutely thunderbolts.
Spurs played brilliant.
Yeah.
They played really, really well. That was one of our better performances in the first half of the season. It was just a case of Messi turned up.
And then in the second half, you guys got it to 2-1, then Messi scores, and then Lamela scores. So it's 3-2 going into the 90th minute when Messi basically was able to have a free run at you, essentially because of the fact that you pumped as many players forward as possible. Is that justifiable, the results in the way that I actually panned out on the day? Do you think that Spurs weren't the better team and Messi was probably the best player on the pitch on the day?
Yeah, obviously when you play Barcelona, it's going to be hard to break them down. But the fact that Spurs were 3-2 going to the 90th minute, I don't think 4-2 really, like, shows the distance between the two teams. I don't think it was quite a close game if you actually watched it in its entirety.
Well, we'll go on to the third game, and if Kieran had no hope after the second game, then I really know what he thought after this third one. It was a very odd performance and a very odd game, really, because actually I thought Spurs actually played quite well in the first half of the game against PSV. 2-2 in the end, away in the Netherlands. And I'll be honest, I think that it was very tight. And I think the main thing was the sending off of the goalkeeper and captain Hugo Lloris. I remember I was watching it with Jeremy Dunn, a fellow Liverpool fan. And he is the guy who's on the podcast earlier for the Liverpool side. And we were watching it unfold, and it was almost a capitulation from Spurs. But it was massively helped by the sending off of the goalkeeper. Do you remember, Dan, what your impression was of the sending off? Did you think that it was justifiable?
I think my thought at the time isn't very censored enough to be portrayed onto this podcast. But I feel like looking back on it, harsh red, and then it would have been a harsh yellow.
Yeah,
like in terms of, it's one of those middle ones that, yeah, like if it goes either way,
cards
ones. Yeah, one of those orange card ones, and it's like, okay, I get it. We just can't defend set pieces, and it's so annoying. Mm. And that's the thing I'm most worried about. Is I've mentioned this before the podcast. I feel like Spurs can score a few goals. It's what Van Dijk's going to do in our box of set pieces that worries me the most.
Was it two set pieces from two that you conceded in that game, in the PSV game? Because I know that one of them was definitely scored.
Lozano's was a counter, maybe. I can't remember. Maybe that's not a goal.
But I know that in this game, it really did show some of the defensive frailties that Spurs had. Bearing in mind, however, Alderweireld played, Trippier played, Sanchez played. I don't believe that Vertonghen was fit for this game, so I think he must have picked up an injury in the league. So you're playing a not fully fit back four, and getting
Trippier's the biggest meme in football.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll get onto him when we talk on the final. But when it comes to that game, 1 point out of a possible of 9, Kieran, I want to know what your thought process was coming out of that. What were you thinking?
I don't know. I just, after, even after that, kind of, the mindset hadn't really changed since after the Barcelona game, and I was just kind of thinking to myself, you know, this is just typical Spurs, in kind of just, for me, when I watch them play and just seeing them, you know, performing, but then not converting, and then making really, really stupid mistakes, and then, you know, obviously with that red card, I'm still, like Henley said, at that moment in time, I was absolutely fuming. I didn't really think it was a red, but it was an orange. And then I was just so pessimistic. Always just had my head down constantly, not really sure what was going on.
You thought it was over at that point?
Yeah, probably. I just thought it was over, yeah.
I think a lot of people underestimated PSV.
Mm.
They were top of the Eredivisie at that point in time, above the star-studded Ajax that people keep on banging on about.
Yeah.
Yes, it didn't end up so well after our kind of the exit from the Champions League. They tailed off a little bit towards the end of the season, but this PSV side aren't a bad team, and I think people overlooked that, and like especially the Spurs team overlooked that. They thought, right, we've lost two games against really good opposition here, we've got to come back, but we're playing a team against that has a winning mentality.
Yeah, I remember that in that game, actually, the likes of Rosario and De Jong for PSV looked actually quite good, and I was actually thinking to myself, wow, actually PSV could actually do something if they get themselves out.
Lozano was the guy that ripped Germany apart in the World Cup.
Yeah.
So you've got to, they are great players. They're in the Champions League for a reason, and it was the group of death for a reason, and I think we just took them too lightly.
Okay, so now we're on to game week and match day 4, and you're playing PSV again, but you're playing them at Wembley. And looking at the story of this game, Luke de Jong scores in the second minute. That's now the second time in the Champions League that you've actually conceded in the second minute. This time, the first time being from a Felipe Coutinho goal against Barcelona. It took until the 78th minute for Spurs to actually get themselves on the score sheet. And looking at the side that you actually fielded, it's not actually too bad. You played Heung-min Son, Mara was also playing, Eriksen was playing, Ali as well. So quite a lot of attacking players that were actually in that side. Does it mean that you've had to adapt a whole lot from what you were doing a lot earlier on in the season, where Kane was able to pick up goals here and there and sort of bail you sort of out? Kane picked up a brace in this game, one that was scored in the 78th minute and one in the 89th. Whereas later on in the season, due to a lot of injuries and whatnot, Kane is being sort of... it's been reduced, the amount that you've had to rely on him, and other players have had to step in. But this game in particular, this shorter shows that Kane was, at that point in the season, somebody that you really looked towards.
I think it's going to do massive things for Kane, because we've rushed him back in the past, and we've rushed him back for big games. And I don't... Champions League aside, if you're on the edge of an injury and you've got a Champions League final coming up, you're going to play.
Yeah.
But I just feel like there's no need to rush him back anymore for next season, which I think is massive for him. It's going to help him with his injuries, and it's going to help him with his fitness. And I feel like being less reliant on Kane is going to be an important thing for us challenging on all fronts next season.
Yeah, I agree. Having someone else there to step in for Kane, who can, you know, consistently provide goals without... you know, I think it's such an important thing, and we don't have that at the moment. I mean, what we do have, and we didn't have that towards the beginning of the season, but obviously we had that big period within the middle of kind of February and March where we didn't have him. And I think players like Mora and Son, and even at little parts, I hate to say Llorente even stepped
Llorente
up.
Llorente was fabulous this season.
Yeah, he provided a couple goals. I haven't been too optimistic about Llorente in the past.
I know,
but he did step up for it.
At the first part of the season, I remember you really slating Llorente, saying, oh, how on earth he's playing for Spurs, even the fact that he's on the bench for Spurs. He came on in this game. I don't know to what effect. I don't know what he was able to do in the game. But around this time, I remember you just sort of thinking, if Kane gets injured, you know, what do we do? Because if we play him, then, you know, we don't have a whole lot of attacking outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing what you know now and the way that the Champions League has all panned out, do you sort of agree with what Henley's been saying? Because knowing that he's picked up some injuries here and there, and you've been able to get as far as you have, despite the fact that you have these games like you played against PSV where Kane's able to bail you out, it must feel good knowing that.
Oh, yeah.
That.
So much better, because having you know, those players who are able to step up now and get into that role is just so beneficial.
Yeah.
Really puts your mind at ease when you're watching the match, knowing that you're not relying on one player to convert for you. You know, you've got two or three up there who can do the job.
I think we're going to race through these as fast as we can, really, because when we get towards some of the meatier games of the group stage, you sort of get to the around this period, actually. It was actually towards the end, because we've only got actually two match days to go. The penultimate game in the group stage for Spurs was against Inter. That was against Internazionale at Wembley Stadium. I did feel that Spurs in that game were going to need a little bit of luck. Eriksen actually comes off the bench to actually get the winner in the end. I think that Inter actually didn't put on a terrible performance, but I think that they were not as good as they were when they were in their own stadium. I think, actually, the whole complexion of the game, it wasn't a very spectacular game, actually, watching it. I think Eriksen actually scoring the 80th minute goal, I mean, I remember at the time me sort of thinking, wow, Spurs, after being absolutely punished in the Champions League, they've actually been able to punish Inter with what was quite a boring game, really, very uninteresting, and we're able to just get a goal out of it and get all 3 points. You must be elated with that sort of performance, really.
Yeah, it was one of those performances where I was like, God, I feel like I'm wasting my money. It was interesting. Then Harry Winks hits the crossbar. We're like, we could have been back in the Champions League. And then Eriksen scores after, I think it was a wonderful run from Moussa Sissoko from in his own half.
Mm.
Slides it through to Dele and he flicks it on, and the rest is quite in the history of Eriksen gets the ball. But that, I felt this game in particular was the moment I started to think, God, we could actually get through this group.
Yeah.
It was what, like, okay, so we're level on points now. I think we're level or above Inter on points at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
So we basically just needed to get a better result than Inter in the next game, which obviously was going to be hard.
It was because Inter had dropped points, I believe. I think they dropped points against PSV. I think they'd lost at home and away, maybe. So they were looking like after this game that everything was basically for naught. Now they really thought into that they if they won this game they were going through. So I think you could really say that when it came, I mean, the buzzword that we talked about earlier on in terms of bottling, you could probably say that Inter sort of bottled it in the sense that they really need to just turn up and put it on a decent performance. Because let's be honest, Spurs weren't exemplary. They didn't play Inter off the park. But the fact that you were able to, and this is the key, I think, to be able to winning the Champions League and getting as far as you can, it's not just about fabulous performances. It's not all about, you know, brilliant goals. Sometimes it's about turning up, having a bit of luck, and then sort of being able to grind out these sorts of victories.
I think that's what Potter's got really good at this season, is grinding out results and having that kind of, like, he has this whole thing about heart and drive with footballers. It's kind of a bit of cliche, but it does kind of show a little bit. And like the connection he has with his team and that kind of dressing room morale that Spurs have, I think it definitely does show for something. It does show on the pitch.
Yeah.
With that sort of team spirit and driving out results. And you know what Ferguson used to say, that good teams, winners, grind out results. They win teams, but they win games 1-0 and they move on to the next game.
Do you think then after this game, actually, I can sort of remember what you said, Kieran. I think you sort of still said that I think we still won't get through. But I think this was partly you thinking, you know, this is classic Spurs, we're going to have tried really hard and we're still going to fall short.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, like you said, it was kind of that game wasn't amazing to watch. You couldn't really see much coming from Spurs. You couldn't see them, I mean, until Eriksen, you know, came off the bench, I didn't really see anything from Spurs that was looking, you know, good enough to convert it and actually get the result. And so even after that match and Eriksen did come on, I thought it'd really have to be in our favour for us to go through.
I think looking at the group stages, actually, the way that it panned out, going into the final game, basically, Inter and Spurs were on level points, and it was all down to, I believe it was goals four, that, yeah, it was, because you were tied on goal difference, so, and you were tied on points. So if neither team were able to win their games, it would go down to goals four. Because I think that goal difference, if you'd have drawn the game, if both of the teams had drawn the game, then it would have gone to goals four. The way that it actually panned out in the final game was it really did look as if things for Spurs were going to be very, very uphill. Because in the 7th minute in the game against Barcelona, the final game of the group stage four, Spurs, Ousmane Dembele scores for Barcelona. And then you're sort of thinking, maybe it's going to be all over, because until actually then, in the 13th minute of the PSV Inter Milan game, PSV gives you a massive hand, and Lozano actually scores in the 13th minute. So it's sort of looking like you will still be in it. What were your thoughts going through that game, Henley? Did you think that Barcelona away from home, very, very tall order, you're going to have to really turn up, and you need a bit of luck to be able to go through?
I don't know. Sometimes I portray myself on some of these shows as the most pessimistic Spurs fan. I think I was one of the only Spurs fans that went into this game thinking, oh, I reckon we can get a result.
Yeah.
Because that home fixture, it was 4-2, yes, granted, but we were 3-2 going into the 90th minute. Like, it was, we were by no means out of that game. And I just felt like, with the results going our way at that point in time, then you just never know what could happen. And Barcelona, they have their frailties. You've exploited them very well. Liverpool exploited very well in the semi-finals. Like, their defence isn't great, and I felt like any kind of good chance that we may craft beyond their midfield, something could happen. You never knew.
What did you think, Kieran? Did you have any hope?
Yeah, I had a little bit of hope. I think there's always, I always kind of, with Spurs, you know, I think there's always that little bit of, we'll be lucky, we'll be able to, you know, scramble one in at the end, and or, you know, we'll catch them on the break or something like that, or we'll catch them in a mistake, and, you know, that's what we did at the end, and I think it was quite good to see that happen. But I mean, I wasn't like Henley at all, probably very pessimistic going into the match, but with a little bit of hope, not much.
I think when you caught wind, I think when you might have heard that Icardi had scored for Inter Milan, I think the hope levels would have probably dropped a bit. I sort of want to know what the feeling was in the 80th minute when you saw that Lucas Moura scored the equaliser that basically took you into the knockout stages. What was the feelings in your camp, Henley?
I was just gutted I was going to have to go to like Azerbaijan. So away leg.
Were you thinking that you were going to be able to... I mean, knowing that you would have gone through there to the knockout stages, you must have been absolutely elated knowing that, you know?
Yeah. When we got through, when Morrow scored, I think that is the most I've screamed at any football match in my life.
Really? Yeah.
Oh, it was just crazy. Because obviously I wasn't able to go, it was Barcelona away.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get a ticket for that one. I was in my living room and beer was spilt.
What did you think, Kieran? Was it a similar sort of story when you watched that game?
I think, unlike Henley, I think it was just complete astonishment. I couldn't even move. Mouth was just dropped. I was there for about 5 minutes until the whistle finally blew, and I couldn't believe it. I was shocked, really, and surprisingly enough, that wasn't going to be the last time this season that was going to happen in the Champions League.
So then you get out of the group stages. Now I believe that you finished second, so it meant that you were going to get a tougher team than the first place team, Barcelona, who finished on 14 points. Tottenham Hotspur finished with 8 points. It's still quite incredible to me that, because everyone says that the golden number in a knockout in the group stage of the Champions League is always 10. The fact that you could get 8 and still qualify is still astounding to me. The fact that you had 2 wins, 2 draws and 2 losses and still able to get through. Absolutely fantastic stuff there from Spurs. So we're now on to the knockout stages, and being the fact that Spurs finished second in their group stage, that meant that they were going to get a tall order in the first round of the knockouts. So that meant that whoever finished first in the group stages, other than I believe that you couldn't play Barcelona again, you would have to have had one of the other teams. So it was either going to be Borussia Dortmund, who you ended up getting in the end, Paris Saint-Germain, who Liverpool played in Group C, Porto, who was the winner in Group D, Bayern Munich, who were then knocked out by Liverpool, and you wouldn't be able to play with Manchester City because I don't think you could play English teams at that point. And then the final team that won in the final two teams was Real Madrid, who won Group G, and then Group H winners Juventus. Out of all those teams, who was the team that you wanted to avoid the most in the first round of the knockouts?
I'd actually say Dortmund were up there.
Yeah.
I really didn't want to play Dortmund. They were top of the Bundesliga. They were playing some amazing football.
Yeah.
They've got some great young players. I really did not want to play Dortmund. I wanted, Porto, obviously. They were I didn't mind having Real Madrid. They were in a bit of a sticky patch. They're still in a sticky patch. I feel like we could have done them one over again over two legs. Didn't want Juventus because...
Ronaldo.
One, Ronaldo, and two, Kane would be shut down by Italian teams.
Yeah.
He was shut down against Inter, and he shut down against Juventus last season. We don't like playing against Italian teams because they just stall us out. You know what Italian teams like defending-wise, and we can't deal with that.
Yeah.
It's like playing like a Burnley every week.
The likes of your wingers being restricted a lot, with the likes of Son, of course, not being able to do as much. I can see why you would say that. Would you have said that the likes of Juventus or Dortmund were the team that you wanted to avoid, Kieran?
No, I don't know. Dortmund, I think, even though Dortmund, you know, had really young players and they were kind of really performing well in the Bundesliga and they were at the top of the Bundesliga doing really well, I kind of thought that a little bit of inexperience in their young players might have actually played into our favour. So I was actually thinking maybe Dortmund may have been a better option, in fact. And like Henley said, probably I was thinking Juventus probably would have been the worst option we would have had. Real Madrid wasn't doing too well at the time. Just to show me didn't get Porto, maybe even easier though.
So in the end, Spurs were drawn up against Borussia Dortmund, and it was the first time that I saw in the Spurs Champions League campaign that this was a polished performance from Tottenham in all aspects. This was around the time, I believe, that Harry Kane was injured. This was it the second or third injury of the season? It's weird that you have to then go back to how many injuries he's actually had, and you have to say how many. Which one was it? Because I think that it was a very unorthodox lineup. It was the first time that around this time that he was sort of experimenting with the likes of Lucas Moura as striker alongside Heung-min Son, and then you would have Eriksen as the cam. What? I mean, you must have went to the game, Henley. What?
This was the one Champions League game I didn't go to this season.
Oh, no.
So that's the reason why you aren't going to the game, because of those loyalty points. This is the one game.
I missed probably our best performance of the season. Yes.
Did you watch it on the telly?
I did watch it on the telly. It was around sort of just after exams. I'd just come back to Nottingham. Couldn't quite make it back. Wednesdays are difficult. Tuesdays and Wednesdays are difficult to get back from Nottingham. But yeah, it was just a really good performance. Vertonghen is a world-class left-back, apparently.
That is actually a very, very interesting point, because Callum McPhail, who is a routine person here on View from the Stands, a veteran...
I thought
you were
going to say a routine left-back.
No, veteran of View from the Stands, is he put out what was the BBC asked for what you would have done for your start 11 for all the finals, for Europa League and for the Champions League, and he put Vertonghen at left back, and he made a very, very interesting case, not one that persuaded me that Robertson was worthy to be dropped for it there. But Vertonghen in that game, like Henley said, he played out of his skin.
I mean, goal and assist.
Yeah, he was very, very good. I mean, you played with a back three and, well, a back five, if you want to say. But you had Alderweireld, you had Foyth, that was also in centre-back, which was alarming to me. And then you had Davinson Sanchez alongside. And then as a right-back, you had Aurier. So it all seemed very makeshift from a Liverpool perspective, or from a neutral perspective. So when I saw the Borussia Dortmund lineup, I was thinking, God, this could be, you know, this could be Dortmund could really pay Spurs here. This because Dortmund were actually favourites for the whole of the tie, but not for this game.
Yeah.
So I was sort of thinking, God, this could be quite difficult for Spurs to get something here. You totally proved me wrong and made me feel like I know nothing about football at all. You must have been elated. 3-0 in the first game of the knockouts. You know, no Harry Kane, and you were still able to get the points. Not the points, you were still able to get a very, very convincing result.
I think that was probably the beginning for me as a Spurs fan, you know, thinking maybe Spurs can actually do something with this season. You know, really pulling it out of the bag, not having that reliance on Kane and just turning up, performing and completely outplaying them. And I wasn't expecting it. And after that game, I think I was a changed man. I think I saw some real, you know, positivity, and that lasted about another two games until it all got struck away. But I mean, yeah, it was.
Son loves to goal against Dortmund as well.
Yeah,
he's been scoring it for years. Even the Bundesliga when he was playing for Hamburg.
Yeah.
And Leverkusen, he was scoring goals for fun against Dortmund. So I knew Son would score.
Yeah.
It was just I didn't realise we'd score three.
Lowest rated player for the Daniel Thacker, the Tottenham Hotspur reporter, did his player ratings, and he said that Moussoko was the worst player on the pitch for Spurs, alongside Juan Foyth. The worst player on the pitch for Dortmund was actually Thomas Delaney, which very surprising. I thought he's actually had a very, very interesting season. And Mahmoud Dahoud, who went for very, very big money to Borussia Dortmund. A lot of flack was given to this very, very young Borussia Dortmund team, and I think it must have been a massive education for them, knowing that they went to an away game in the Champions League and were basically torn apart, really, and they had a massive uphill struggle. You've got to sort of feel for them, knowing that they've got to then go into the second game basically three goals down, and it was very much up against them. So
it's hard to use that young kind of inexperienced tagline when you got Ajax getting to the semi-finals.
Yeah.
With a very, very young team.
Yeah.
And also, I'd like to touch on the Juan Foyth point. I'm going to stick my neck out and say that in 2 years' time, he'll be our starting centre-back ahead of Vertonghen.
Any thoughts on that, Kieran?
I mean, was it Vertonghen's contract only goes until 2020 anyway? Something like that. So, wouldn't surprise me if that happens. Whether I'll trust him or not. I want him to be there, I don't know. But I could probably see that happening as well.
On the ball, he is one of the most composed centre-backs I've ever seen.
There's been a couple of occasions, though, where he's been a bit...
He's been a bit...
Oh, but, you know, experience. We can't, you know...
Ironically,
like,
though...
It's his first season, like, really playing football, like...
Would you put down this season is you know, it's
his finding his feet, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, ironically, you're saying that on the ball, he's quite good. Daniel Thacker really put a pretty scathing game. Analysis, he said a surprise selection, which I thought is three words that really does really stick out in my mind. Struggled to adjust to the step up, gave the ball away too often and looked vulnerable. So quite foolish, you know. I mean, part of a back five though. So you had a lot of defensive sort of bolstering. I mean, you had Jan Vertonghen at left back really. So going into it, you must have sort of thought, you know, even if Juan Foyth is playing as one of the three centre backs, you know, you've got so much cover. I mean, I think that's something that really does need to be mentioned. Throughout the whole of this tie, Spurs didn't concede a single goal, and I think for the second game, Spurs put out a very similar lineup. It was 1-0 in the end in the game. At the Signal Iduna Park, Borussia Dortmund not able to score. He was
somehow.
Because I think they had quite a few chances in that game.
I think they hit the post about seven times, didn't they?
Joke. So Alderweireld was in the back five alongside Davinson Sanchez, who was past fit for this one. Vertonghen returns to the centre back role with Ben Davis making his appearance at left back, and then you have at right back, I believe it was Aurier again.
Who is a better right back than Trippier?
we'll definitely get on to talking about Trippier a bit later on. 1-0 at the Signal Iduna Park. I'd say it's fairly routine because the scoreline really it sort of flatters Spurs in some aspects, because you found it quite difficult really in the game to not necessarily break them down, but carve out some serious chances that would really trouble them. Bearing in mind, like you said, I think Dortmund did hit the post a couple of times, and you know they probably have come away from that thinking to themselves, "Oh my God, have we not we've not scored in either of these games?"
They had something like seven shots on target in the end to Spurs' one or two, yeah. And we converted it, and that's surprisingly enough. Completely shocked me, really.
It's surprising that you're able to convert.
Well, seeing Spurs' conversion rate is something at like 17% for the whole season, and you're thinking, gosh, we did it in one and they didn't do it in seven, so I was a bit surprised.
Some of the stats from here are actually quite interesting. Ball possession, 38% for Spurs. Dangerous attacks, whatever they call dangerous is, you know, it's up for debate here for what UEFA calls that. 21-66 for Borussia Dortmund.
I mean, that just strikes back to the whole incredible tackle by Vertonghen on Royce that kept the game at 0-0.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those tie-saving tackles. Like,
and then
Vertonghen single-handedly won us
the whole of the tie.
Yeah.
I think he was then put in the UEFA team of the
week.
I think he won player of the week for the first game.
I think he did, yeah. And then he wasn't put at left back, so were you sort of thinking, with the fact that Ben Davis came back into the side, that it was maybe a misstep from Poch, or did you think that it was something that was justifiable?
I don't know, it's such an unusual position for him, and we've never really kind of seen him there before. I can see why Poch has thought, right, we've pushed two games, you know, we've pushed one game out of it, maybe don't, you know, chance our luck on another game, yeah. And go back to what the players know.
Yeah.
And what the players can work with more often.
Yeah,
but we needed to make sure it's experience at the back.
You were right, though, by the way, Kieran. It was one attempt on target for Spurs, and they were able to convert that to the six attempts on target for Borussia Dortmund. But
I mean, I don't really know, because, I mean, how many games have we watched where Spurs has had 75% and then seven shots on target and never converted? And then to watch them, you know, with 30%, one shot and one goal, it's just shocking, really. Maybe we need less possession in the future. Not sure.
Would that make your feelings of the final very, very good, though, if you were to go throughout the whole of the game with none of the ball and you were able to just slot?
Oh, that made me very happy to watch
that. Wait, did you just say if we won the Champions League?
No, I mean, sorry, I should rephrase that. Watching the game, I can imagine Kieran's feelings of having none of the ball and then, like, only being able to carve out one chance, you being absolutely devastated. Like, throughout the whole of the game,
I've got to be honest. I genuinely think if Spurs in the final, obviously we'll talk about that, but if Spurs in the final end up having something like 60 or 70% of the possession, anything above 50% of the possession, I'll be seriously worried about us losing it.
Yeah, I think
we'll lose it. If we have more of the possession, we'll lose it. I don't know, it's that weird feeling with Spurs. The amount of times we've had possession and can't convert, I feel like we've got more chance on the break.
Again, it gives me Burnley vibes.
It really does show here in this Borussia Dortmund game, the fact that when you're without the ball, you really can...
We've done it for
football.
Seasons now. Like, we're a good counter-attacking team. I don't know why we don't play to our strengths.
I think with the addition of Lucas Moura and Heung-Min Son, the pace that they've got going against some of these back lines, it must be terrifying. They must be quaking in their boots. So then we get to the quarterfinals, and then it's basically you can have any one of these teams now. And the teams that you could have been drawn up against with. Ajax, Juventus, Liverpool, Porto, Manchester City, Manchester United, or Barcelona. So seven teams for you to have. And you got probably one of the most difficult ones.
I'd say we got the worst one.
Yeah. They were in seriously good form at this point, Manchester City.
Reigning Premier League champions.
Yeah.
The team that I really, really didn't want to come up against, and the team that made me lose another can of beer.
Was that in celebration or commiseration?
I mean, there was a can of beer lost after the draw, and then there was one lost after the Sun goal.
So the first game it was actually at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It was the first one that was played at the first Champions League
first
game.
At
the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, the quarterfinal first game, first leg at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It finished 1-0 to Spurs. So Son was the one who scored the goal, but from what I remember of this game, bearing in mind there was another team that was actually playing at a similar time, I was having my eyes sort of diverted between both games. Man City, this was probably one of their weakest performances of the season, really, for me.
Aguero missed a penalty.
Yeah.
I don't care.
But when you watched the game, did you go to this one then, Henley?
Yes.
So what were your impressions of Spurs on the day?
We were very solid defensively, other than the penalty giving away. We did well to shut down City's danger man. And Son is a very good footballer. And he really, really rattled some City feathers by keeping that ball in at the touchline and smacking it past their beloved Edison.
Yeah.
And it made me feel so good.
I mean, I'm looking at the lineup for Manchester City, actually. No Kevin De Bruyne in the starting 11, because I think this was around the time before he was just coming back from an injury.
They didn't bring him on until the 85th minute or something like that.
It was the 89th minute he was brought on. And I think there was a lot of question marks over that, because I think people were thinking, is Pep really being a bit too arrogant here, thinking that he could get a result away at Spurs with what people, with all due respect to Spurs, what people called a weakened City team, in the fact that they played Mahrez, they played Delph. I think this was around the time as well as Sane was also in some fairly good form as well. Sterling was still tearing up in the Premier League. Sterling did play. But there were some notable absences. I think the fact that Riyad Mahrez played almost 90 minutes of that game was a lot, very, very surprising to a lot of people. But when you look at the Spurs lineup, I mean, I don't think it's too harsh for me to say that for man, you know, City have got a better team, but the way that you played on the day,
you've got to beat the team in front of you.
Yeah.
And we did that in the away leg as well.
Yeah.
They fielded their first team and we got the result that we needed.
Yeah.
So over the two legs, Spurs went through, and there's got to be a reason for that. Whether it's poor man management, poor team selection from Pep Guardiola, you're a unit as a squad. You've got to include the kind of manager's decisions in the way the team plays. And if he's picked the wrong team, then that's got to go on Pep's head.
In the match report, Harry Kane comes off in the 58th minute. Was that down to injury?
Was that Fabian Delph?
Yeah. That's his most recent going industry.
What was your thoughts after that injury?
Looking at it, it was clear that both, I think the two of them, from what I saw in the replays, they both weren't going to tackle each other, but you know, the end of
Kane
that,
overcommitted trying to stop the ball going up for a throw-in, as Kane normally does. Kane's a very committed player, and sometimes it's his worst enemy.
And the fact that then he's then injured again, what must your impressions be? I mean, in that immediate, you were probably thinking to yourselves, oh my God, you know, we've just lost probably our best player not on the pitch, but our overall best player in the side. You hadn't scored at this point.
It wasn't looking good for us going through, I won't lie.
Yeah.
I think I was a bit less worried than I was when he got injured earlier on in the season. Because when he did get injured earlier on in the season, we kind of did show up with our other players, and the other players did show up and provide those goals. And I think it was I was a lot less worried this time. Even though I was worried because it looked quite severe. He was unable to walk off the pitch. He was being held by two guys down the tunnel, and he definitely worried about how long he'd be out for. But I was less worried about the game because I thought, you know, Spurs, me, you know, the Spurs have the, you know, the players to back him up now.
What was incredible was the fact that I was thinking to myself, okay, so Kane has got a very, very patchy injury record. The fact that you've now come accustomed to the players in the Spurs side, they seem almost a bit more comfortable than they were, like you said, earlier on in the season. I can imagine some of their heads dropping and them going, oh God, we've just lost our best player there, and we're going to have to play how many more minutes of this game? But the fact that you bring on Lucas Moura, who, you know, we'll obviously talk a little bit more about him as we talk about more of the semis and the quarters. He's been stellar in the Champions League. The fact that you bring him on and the flow of the game is still quite good. You were still playing very, very good football. I also want to mention again, this is another game where you had less of the ball, 41% of possession, four shots on target to City's two. It does seem as if carving out chances through counter-attacks and with these pacey wingers is something that Spurs, you just need to deal with it now because it's one of your strong points.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Like, it's what Liverpool did initially to become the successful team that they currently are. Well, maybe not entirely like successful, but you get my kind of point. Two Champions League finals in a row is not any mean feat. That you've done it off of less midfield control and more hitting teams with the pace up front, and that's what we need to do more often.
So we go from one game where the margin was one goal to another game where the margin was also one goal, but there was seven goals scored to one in the first leg. I didn't watch this live because I was having to watch another team, which were able to decimate their team almost by the end of the first half. So in the pub that I was in, everyone was sort of asking for this game to be put on because it sounded like it was possibly one of the best games of the season in all
at this
of,
point of the season anyway.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, it was incredible. Some of the things that I heard from that game. I mean, you must have been thinking to yourselves when Sterling scores that goal in the fourth minute, oh God, here we go. Things are going to be difficult now, because if City are going to really turn it on in the way that they seem like they were able to do as early on as the fourth minute, you could have been in for a massive ride. But, you know, the story of the game. What I want to know, from a Spurs fan's perspective, what must have you been thinking? Because there must be no point in that game where you were thinking, we're going through, we're going out, you know, this is the, you know, you must have felt so energised because it was such a different game to your standard game of football in the Champions League.
It was a really weird game, and the fact that within 4 minutes, the first leg pretty much meant nothing.
Yeah.
It was like we were starting on a clean slate and we had to go to City and, well, either win or get a result that would send us through. So that was good. Sometimes being a Tottenham fan is one of the hardest jobs in the world. And I've mentioned this a few times on the View from the Stand group chat, and everyone turns their nose at me like, I support Fulham, it's much worse, we got relegated or something like that. But no, it's the hope that kills you.
Yeah.
And it was the hope of that first leg to instantly taking away from me in the second leg. And then I basically had to just sit on my sofa being very, very nervous.
Yeah,
for 90 minutes yeah. of my life.
Then Son scores a brace in a matter of what? From the Sterling goal in 6 minutes to basically change the whole of the complexion of the tie then.
Yeah.
You then see that Tottenham have got an away goal. Not only that, they've got two away goals. They're leading in the tie. City have then got to come right back at them. Bernardo Silva scores instantly, almost.
It's crazy, what was it? Four goals in, you know, in 12 minutes.
Yeah. So we're looking at that.
It was like a game of the hokey pokey. We were in, out, and at the end we were shaking all about in the away end.
Nobody seemed to know where this game was going to end up. And I want to know, what were you thinking at half time? Were you guys confident? Were you guys nervous? Was there any level of you that were thinking, yeah, we're going to get through this?
I mean, on that specific game, I think I was driving back down to London, and stupidly I stuck on the radio, and that's probably one of the most uncomfortable things to ever do, is to listen to football live on the radio. And you know, I think at half time I was thinking I was just lucky I was driving my car and not inside, you know, crashed it on the central reservation, to be honest, because that was a whirlwind first half. And I don't know if I was, you know, tempted to switch it off at that point, because I didn't know if we were gonna, you know, what the second half was be like. But
yeah,
happy, frustrated at the same time, because we do, you know, by that point we were what, 3-2 down. So I was thinking, could we still get this? I mean, we were level with the away goals, and kind of just, you know, hoping, you know, that we don't have to rely on the away goal to get through.
And then in the second half, I mean, the substitution is made just before the end of the first, in that Sissoko has to come off. And with all due respect to Sissoko, he's had, you know, in the past, he's had a very, very difficult time at Spurs. This season, he's been very good in the way that he's been able to turn things around. The fact that he came off towards the end of the first half, what were you thinking, Dan? You know, you've sort of lost probably one of your most integral midfield players, especially defensively. You must have been thinking, God, you know, with all the attacking prowess of City, it's going to be even more difficult than probably what you were thinking at the start of the game.
Yeah, but there's been a few games this season where Sissoko's not started, and as soon as he's come on, our midfield just looks completely invigorated with loads of energy and power, and he does bring a lot to the plate, and he has been one of my favourite players this season, and he's definitely the most improved player this season. And to lose him just before half time with the tie literally on a tightrope, I was just fearing for the worst. I think that is the best way to put it. I know how good City are. They've put us to the sword already this season. I just really hope that we could dig deep.
Fearing for the worst. I mean, Kieran, when you saw that Lorente was the number, when you saw that his number, the number 18, was coming up on the substitutes board, or rather when you heard that it was coming on the radio,
yeah,
you must have been thinking, knowing what I know that you said about Lorente for the whole of the season.
Knowing what... I just don't have much faith in him. And as soon as I heard that over the radio, I kind of just... my heart sunk a little bit. But at the same time, all the hope left. And, you know, almost a little bit of relaxation kind of happened. I was like, oh, probably won't win now, because I don't really trust him to ever help us convert or get through. So, yeah, I was wrong.
This shows how much that's professional radio.
Yeah. So, second half, and Aguero scores in the 59th minute. It's now all for Spurs to do. They need to be able to get a goal as soon as possible. Aguero celebrated like an absolute maniac, thinking that the tie was basically all over them because of the defensive qualities of Manchester City. They basically had a full strength team, like Dan said. They had Kompany in the back line alongside Aymeric Laporte, who's had an absolutely stellar season. Benjamin Mendy actually made an appearance. I'm surprised he was fit. And Kyle Walker was at right back. So looking at that, you were probably then thinking, Aguero scores, there's a lot to do here. Of all the people to score the goal, is Fernando Llorente the person that you would have been most surprised to score?
Surprisingly not. Like, in the Champions League this season, Llorente's been the game changer in pretty much all the games. He did the same last season. He was the reason, really, why we beat Madrid at Wembley. Him and his partnership with Kane up top. For some reason, teams in Europe can't defend against a big man like Llorente. And it's weird to say that teams in Europe don't defend, because we're playing an English team. But for some reason, as soon as that kind of Champions League music comes on, big defenders just forget how to mark Llorente.
It did seem as if Aymeric Laporte and Kompany were having kittens at the back, especially when that ball was swung in, because they were trying to jostle Llorente as best as possible. But, you know, with a man with such of his stature,
it was like watching a 30-year-old play against his kids. It's just like the ball gets pinged to him, he somehow knocks it down to Lucas, and he's on his way.
Yeah.
It's the same in the Ajax game. He wins everything.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how. His company, he's got the biggest head in football.
Yeah.
Bigger than Maguire, and he still couldn't get his noggin past Llorente.
You must. Did you switch off the radio at this point, Kieran?
No, I think at that point I'd pulled up on the hard shoulder and just decided to cry in the back. But
pull out your extra pair of underpants, yeah, just strap them on for the rest of the game.
Yeah. Coddle yourself into his boot.
Honestly, it was curled up in a ball on the back seat. Didn't know what was going on. Just kind of rocking myself, trying not to cry. But yeah, as soon as that goal went in, I was lost it.
Yeah,
lost it. Couldn't believe it.
Accident.
I think. I think, you know, those two Man City, you know, defenders at the back, they were just probably just so shocked he was even playing properly. They just couldn't believe it and didn't know how to defend against him. So
yeah,
just crazy.
And then probably the biggest story of the Champions League season, other than maybe two ones that we're talking in the semis, the celebrations of the Sterling disallowed goal and the way it was overturned. I know that you were watching the game live, Dan. Go through the emotions. So Sterling
blacked it.
Yeah, well, we'll try and... So Sterling scored. What are you then thinking?
Was my first one. It was just a case of, like, we've come so far, but fair.
Yeah.
Like, I'll take quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And then I saw a big VAR. I was like, oh,
it's potential.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the referee just decides to not give the goal. And I was like, why? It looked fine. And Aguero was a toenail offside. And I was like, bottles everywhere.
Massive celebrations, I must assume. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just say at least, yeah.
I came from behind my sofa.
So this happened so late on that it basically took all the wind out of the sails of Manchester City. Eriksen, though, he must have felt like the luckiest man on the planet, because Eriksen, instead of trying to clear the ball into row Z, he tries to put the ball through to either Mara or Llorente, and that basically just backfires. The ball goes to Bernardo Silva, I believe, or David Silva. Ball's put through to Sergio Aguero. Aguero's, like Dan said, a toenail offside. You both must have just felt like, if we're getting this, not just the fact that we've played well, this is luck, this really. This is, I mean, not in the sense of you were lucky, it was a terrible decision that was being made. You're lucky because of the fact that it happened, and you can look back on it and think, wow, we've got a bit of luck on our side really here. And even though it was the right decision to be made at the time, you guys must be thinking, God, if we're able to get this, we can go pretty far here, because there's certain levels of quality and luck and determinedness that goes into winning a football game. I think in that one, there was a fierce level of luck going into it.
Yeah, but that luck could have gone, just at that moment where, you know, the ref's looking at the VAR, that luck could have gone either way. I know it was offside, but it was lucky, but you know, you could have seen it go towards Manchester City if it wasn't for the VAR quite easily. Luck, yeah, and I think we've definitely had luck for the rest of the Champions League so far on when it comes to that.
It's hard to say luck when it is the rules of football, though.
I know, but it's the way that it was. It was the way that it was just so, like, last gasp, you know. I mean, at that point, it made it
even better.
It was so late on in the game. You guys must have been, like you said, you were deflated. You were thinking, yeah, this is it now. So the fact that you were then coming away on away goals, 4-4 in aggregate, to get yourselves into the next round of the Champions League, semi-finals beckoned for Tottenham Hotspur, and you were up against any one of the three teams that were left. It was either Ajax... Oh, no, it wasn't, because of the fact that the way that it was seeded. So it was either going to be Ajax or Juventus. So Juventus ended up losing in the quarterfinals. You were up against Ajax in the semi-final of the Champions League. You guys, I would have assumed, may have been feeling a little bit happier knowing that Ajax were going through rather than Juventus. Knowing that you would have...
Yeah.
Knowing that Juventus was a team that you so wanted to avoid earlier on in the campaign. Ronaldo factor, you know, the way that their defenders set up, Ajax going through, you must have been thinking, can I book my ticket to the final now?
By no means. I've been a Tottenham supporter for too long to even think about that. I was fully ready to lose 8-0 and be entirely happy with getting to a Champions League semi-final.
Yeah.
Something I've never experienced in my life as a Tottenham fan. So at that point, I was just proud. I didn't really care what happened after this.
Yeah.
To get into the position we are now, I'm still a bit like, we've got a game on Saturday.
Yeah. So you...
used to it being over by now. long way ago.
Ajax then,
I'm used to seeing all the Instagram photos of everyone on the beach.
I want to go on holiday.
It's not been happening, yeah.
Ajax then. Were you thinking that you were going to be able to do it, or...?
Yeah, I thought... I just thought it'd be a lot easier than Juve. And happy, but knowing anything could happen at the same time. Mm. Kind of almost with a little bit of doubt in my mind, knowing that Ajax is the easier team. So then Juve should have been, and knowing that it's ours to lose now, and I think that definitely came out that we might have just lost it for ourselves at some point throughout the rest of the tie.
You brought up earlier on that Spurs thrive in the role as being underdogs, so being massive favourites for this tie, do you think that they were actually thinking to themselves, oh god, this is a position that we're not actually really used to? Mm. How are we going to be able to deal with this?
Yeah, I felt like that was kind of lost after about 20 minutes of the game. Ajax for the first half were brilliant. Mm. They played us off the park. And it showed. They scored a goal. They got their away goal. They were all very happy. It was a weird situation because you feel like if you're in a Champions League semi-final as Tottenham Hotspur, you probably should be the underdogs. And it was a very weird dynamic, and it felt like in the crowd, like the atmosphere was a bit weird, because we didn't really know whether to take it as like a Europa League knockout stages or Champions League semi-final.
You also fielded a more weakened team than you did in the previous round. Heung-min Son, I believe, was missing for this one.
He was suspended.
Yeah. You had to play Mara and Dele Alli. Dele Alli was one of the forwards. Llorente was the sole striker in the end. With his heroics though in the previous round though, you can sort of see why he was put in the lineup. 1-0, seeing the lineup that Spurs put out, I know that if I was in that position, I'd have taken that. But this is a semi-final of the Champions League. There's no time when you would probably want to give away an away goal. Do you think that it was a fair reflection of the game?
No. I don't think it was. Having been there, having watched the entirety of the game, I think a lot of people were focused on that first half.
Yeah.
A lot of people took the game for its first half. Yes, Ajax were the better team. In the second half, though, they were completely off the pace.
Yeah.
Spurs could have scored 3 or 4. We had shots, we had chances, we got into better positions, but we just couldn't get past De Ligt.
Yeah.
But as the game wore on, I felt more and more confident, and I knew from the previous rounds that Ajax are better away than they are at home, and they always tend to do well in the away legs.
They did it in the previous round.
They did it in the previous round. So I came up the ground talking to my dad, and I was just like, I don't think it's that bad. I feel like we can go to Ajax and get a result. They didn't look amazing. They didn't look like world beaters. Yes, for the first half they were great. For the second half, they showed their weaknesses.
I've always said to myself that a 0-0 in the home leg is actually a good result, because knowing that you just need to score one goal at their ground, that's fine. Because then they have to score two then.
Yeah.
So knowing that they only scored one, you probably were always thinking anyway, we're probably going to have to score in...
I felt more confident after that game than I did before it.
Yeah.
About the tie.
Because you knew that you would then have to go to their ground with a lot more pressure and be thinking, we have to score a goal now.
And I knew how our team would line up against theirs. Mm. I knew kind of how their team played and how our team played and how our team would react to them.
Mm.
And I think that's an important thing. With Ajax being quite an, I want to say unknown, because obviously in history they've been an absolutely fantastic European team, but in terms of in modern times, they're not known for being a great European team. So, and they don't play in a fantastic league. So it's kind of hard to judge whether they're going to be unbelievable or kind of bang average and they've been a bit lucky. So that first game kind of steadied a lot of people's nerves, I think.
Well, I think it was, because some people say it was a first, it was kind of a tale of two halves, that game. But it was almost just after 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, they Ajax had that first 20 minutes and they scored in the 15th where they were absolutely, you know, they were on top of it. But after that, I mean, we were in control and we should have converted more, but we didn't. And yeah, I think you're right. After that match, a much more hopeful thing, knowing that we have the ability to play for a long period of time where Ajax were on the back foot. So I was looking forward to that second match.
So the second leg, semi-final, Champions League in Amsterdam, Spurs were trailing one goal and they needed a score as fast as possible. The opposite and probably the worst scenario happened. Ajax score in the 5th minute through De Ligt, probably the main guy for Ajax for the whole of the Champions League campaign. Everyone saying that he's possibly going to be going to Barcelona in a £90 million deal for a centre-back. For a player who is basically a teenager, that is absolutely incredible.
He's 19, isn't he?
Yeah. It's an absolutely incredible story. Seeing the lineup that Spurs actually put out, much better than the one that they put out in the first leg. Lucas Moura playing alongside Heung-min Son, who's back from a suspension. Eriksen behind him, and I believe that Moussoko was back for this game. So you seemed as if you had almost a fully strength team with the obvious absences of Davinson Sanchez and Harry Kane. When that goal goes in the 5th minute through De Ligt, and then the 35th by Ziyech, that first half, I would have thought it's basically all over for Spurs, because knowing that they have the away goal, two more goals. I mean, I'll be honest, as somebody who was watching the other semi-final, I was thinking it's going to be Ajax-Liverpool in the Champions League final. Was that your guys' impression?
Yeah. three-nil down there with 45 minutes left. I mean, any sane football fan, unless you're the most optimistic fella in the world, you're going to think 3-0 is pretty hard to come back in 45 minutes. That's going to take some doing.
Yeah.
But I mean, this match was after the Liverpool match, wasn't it? The one where you guys had Liverpool had come back.
Mm.
And I think there was that little bit of hope inside us.
Jokingly, maybe.
Yeah, jokingly. Like, oh, you know what, they did it, maybe we could do it. That was a little bit. I think that, because it happened on the other side of the, you know, the Champions League, I think maybe that there was a little bit of hope inside me thinking, you know what, this could be possible. But I knew we'd have to turn it around very, very quickly. But
apparently that was part of Potter's mindset as well. I think maybe at half time he gave a speech saying to the players, listen guys, you know, there's been stranger things that have happened this season, and you know, we can do this.
We've already done it, isn't it? Yeah, and we've already had to, you know, had a really tight tie in the previous.
You guys watching the second half? Did you guys watch the whole of it? So 55th minute, Lucas Moura scores. You guys must be thinking, okay, you know, one goal, you know.
No, I know, you know, as someone who, I do describe myself as a pessimistic fan, but as that one goal went in, I'd say my mindset completely switched and I thought that was awesome.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not something that happens often to me, you know, thinking 3-1 down, oh yeah, we're going to go through to the next round.
We scored quickly.
Yeah, yeah. I think
10 minutes after the restart is very, very good, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was ours. Even though we're 3-1 down.
Yeah.
Shouldn't really be expecting that.
4 minutes later, Moura doubles it's now 2-2 in the game, but you need another goal because of the away goal system. It wasn't away goals at this point. It was the fact that you were trailing on aggregate because Ajax had scored at Tottenham. So now, the way that you said you scored so quickly after the restart, the second goal came uber quick. You were probably then thinking, wow, we are...
Those two goals were so important because they came quickly.
Yeah.
If we would have scored in the 78th minute, that gives Ajax more time to settle.
Yeah.
And gives them more time to just kind of... The game is only 12 minutes away.
Yeah.
We can get this done. Whereas they had half an hour to defend one goal.
Yeah.
And they couldn't do it.
I think that you make a very, very good point there, Dan, because the main thing that I was thinking from a perspective of thinking of the final, if you're Liverpool, you're probably thinking, as the game was progressing, these Ajax players are tiring out so much.
They hit in the first leg.
Yeah.
In the first leg, their second half performance, especially towards the end of the game, they just sort of petered out and they were defending for their lives in that first leg.
Mm.
It just felt like the same thing was happening again. It just felt like because you come back to this young legs thing. They just haven't got the legs to last the full 90 minutes and really grit out a result.
So it ran down, the clock kept on going. But you guys must have had some lingering amount of hope in this, because, listen, it's one goal. They're so knackered, Ajax. I could see that De Ligt, for all of his qualities, he was definitely tiring. He was dead on his feet. I could see that Blind was absolutely knackered. You must have been thinking, you know, there's still something. And then injury time, 96th minute.
Final kick of the game, wasn't it?
So you must have had another can that you want to build to Lucas Moura.
It was like a 10 out of 10 Ocean VK yeet. It was incredible. Yeah. I honestly, that man, I could have kissed him on the head at that moment in time. My dad was crying.
Yeah.
It was all going off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was must have been
I think my life peaked.
Yeah.
At the time Moura scored that third goal. I think Jermaine Genius peaked as well. Did you hear the commentary?
Oh, yeah.
Could barely get his words out.
He was crying, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There must have been... I mean, what must have you been thinking, Kieran?
Oh, I was just shocked.
Yeah.
Thinking... I think the main thing was thinking, crap, I've got to go to Liverpool now. got to play them.
Yeah.
But I was just so happy. Was it the first time we'd been in... Like Henley said, it's the first time we've been in the semi-finals.
Yeah,
in our lifetime.
Mm.
Now we're in the final. Just thinking, Gracken, this is gonna be the new thing we play for the rest of the season. And it was also coming back to those, you know, Ajax players, you know, working their socks off to their peak level of fitness. After that goal went in, it was like all 11 of them just got shot.
Yeah.
Just on the floor, they couldn't move. Well, obviously, big loss to them, but you could tell they were just completely physically drained from that. I think that's one thing I really enjoy about Spurs, is that their fitness, they know they can last the 90 minutes and they can push 100% for 90 minutes.
That is what really got you through that tie, in my opinion.
Moura was going about 100 miles an hour in the 96th minute. I just don't know how he does it.
Yeah.
It's crazy, because it's not like he kind of waddles around the pitch sometimes to kind of preserve energy. He's 100% all the time.
And Kieran's got that spot on. Poch has got that really locked down for Spurs. Their fitness is up there with the best in the Premier League, maybe even the best in Europe, really, the way that you were playing.
I feel like that was his main thing that he wanted when he first came to the club. He wanted everyone at a fitness level where they could play for 90 minutes at 100%, and I think that's helped us a lot over the last... And that's, and especially when it's come to difficult games, that's been our biggest attribute, is having players that are giving it 100% constantly for 90 minutes. And I think it'll be a really, really important thing when it comes to the Liverpool game as well.
Well, here we go. It's time to build up for the last half hour to the Champions League final. Liverpool play Tottenham Hotspur in the Wanda Metropolitan, I don't know, Madrid Stadium. I've recorded what the Liverpool fans have thought. I think that with the fact that Spurs... the way that things have panned out for the whole of the season for Spurs, once again, going in as underdogs, but this is something that isn't new to Spurs and it's something that you actually relish. So what's your guys' feelings going on into the final?
I'm quite confident that we're underdogs.
Yeah.
It's a weird, weird, weird sensation that... I think quite clearly Liverpool are the better team, from sort of across the pitch, but especially in defence. You've conceded a lot less goals. But I don't know. There's just something about Spurs this season. They just keep on surprising us.
Mm.
And I feel like just deep down, maybe something like a 97th minute Sissoko win, just to cap off my life. I can go out strong.
Yeah, I think I'd have to send out a search and rescue party. Kieran, knowing that you are so close from a huge, huge title for Spurs, but knowing that you're underdogs, knowing that this is the first time that you've come this far really in this competition, this feeling of maybe just losing this final, it's probably not as bad as the feeling that Liverpool would have if they were to lose the final. Is that something that you can play to the advantage of Spurs?
Oh, definitely. I think when it comes to the night, I think all the Spurs players will be thinking, you know, we've worked really, really hard to be here, and we're the underdogs, and we're going to give it all we've got. And I think it is Liverpool's game to lose at the end of the day. But no way am I ruling Spurs out, because as we've seen throughout the whole of the Champions League, they could literally, they can come up with anything and they can win in the most difficult circumstances. And like Henley said, even, you know what, Llorente scoring in the 96th minute. Might have one
he, was ma- he was my man of the match in the Ajax second leg. He came on and completely changed the game.
Yeah.
Like, Moura, yes, he scored a hat-trick, but just the way, like, I just want to see a Llorente versus Van Dijk 97th minute contest for the, like, maybe an arm wrestle.
Yeah.
If it comes down to penalties, just swap it for a Van Dijk versus Llorente arm wrestle. That would make my night.
So, you guys are thinking that you guys are underdogs, and, you know, it's something that can play to the advantage of Spurs. I think more so that you have been labelled as underdogs because there have been absentees that are just about to make it back in time for the final. Kane has been making a lot of statements saying that he's going to be 100% fit. There's been a lot of talk of people around Spurs saying, yep, yeah, he's going to play, he's going to be fine for it. There's still a few question marks around Davinson Sanchez. But in terms of Harry Kane, do you think that all these stories of him being 100% fit is as 100% true as they are saying?
Yeah, I reckon so. Did you see him running after the Ajax game? He's fine, isn't he? I was like, what, are you not playing?
Yeah.
Like, I think he'll be all right.
Yeah.
It may be a case of all Liverpool watch out, Kane's back. He may not even start. He might come on, but no, Kane's fine. He's the master of recovery.
It seems as if, I mean, the way that we talked earlier on in the podcast was you guys were saying that it's a real good quality that Spurs aren't rushing back Kane.
Mm.
Is there a question mark, though, whether, you know, if Kane was not going to have the chance of playing in the Champions League final, do you think that he would have been cleared as 100% fit, though? Do you think that there is elements of this that you're probably thinking?
It's been 2 months since his injury.
Yeah.
That clears most injuries. Mm. And especially a recurrence injury. When you have recurrence injuries, they're often just a sort of stretch of the ligaments, especially in the ankle, and you tend to be fit. There was talk that he maybe be returning for the last game of the season at Everton.
Mm.
And that was a month ago.
Yeah.
I genuinely think Champions League final or not, he would have returned. But there is no way Kane would miss the Champions League final regardless, but I think this time genuinely he'll be okay.
Do you think then that with the likes of Kane being past fit for it, the lineup then for Spurs, you guys were talking a bit earlier on, just before we recorded the podcast, Dan, you were saying about the fact that you think it's going to be very attacking. You were looking at the likes of Son, Mara and Kane playing. Is that a consensus that you both have? What do you think, Kieran?
I don't know if I want him to start.
Kane?
Yeah, I do enjoy him on the pitch, but as we saw earlier on in the season against, what was it, that Barca match or the Inter Milan match, he was isolated up there, and, you know, teams target that, and I think almost it might be beneficial to have him on as someone, because that's what Spurs misses at the end of the day, you know, as a bit of a more bigger talking point. Spurs doesn't have a depth to a squad, you know, we've kind of, you know, sometimes we struggle to get a decent, you know, starting lineup, and having maybe Kane on the bench and coming on, you know, for the last 30 minutes as someone with completely fresh legs to completely change up the field, I think that would be really, really beneficial.
The only thing would be is if you're losing at half time, you know, the question marks will be around Poch saying, why didn't you start him? So he's sort of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, really. Kane sort of put him in a very tricky position. I think Son's also put him in a very tricky position as well, because he's just been exemplary this season.
It's not really bad. It's not the worst decision to have to make, though, is it?
No.
I think with the whole Kane thing, like, yes, you can do what Inter did and isolate Kane. But what happens with isolation is you then start having pockets of space.
Mm.
And that's what Llorente did really well. De Ligt tried to man-mark Llorente out of that second half.
Mm.
He did so, yeah. He only got some knock-ons off away, but he wasn't really a threat in the box. But what he was a threat is knocking some space out behind De Ligt for Moura and Son to run into. As soon as Van Dijk starts sort of attaching himself to Kane, that takes out their best defender.
Yeah.
their best defender at one-on-ones, that Son can then run and Lucas can then run in behind.
Arguably, though, the defence of Liverpool with the likes of Robertson and Trent Alexander-Arnold should be able to deal with the wingers that Spurs do have. I think what is something that Spurs should be really, you know, thinking, oh, God, these are some players that I really wish wouldn't be off past fit. Last game of the season for Liverpool, Robertson, it was almost touch and go whether he'd be fit for that game. Same with Mohamed Salah. I think if you take Salah out of the team, it's almost a different complexion with the way that Liverpool will probably be perceived for this final. But if Robertson was ruled out injured, I mean, you guys must be licking your lips with the idea of having Lucas Moura. But it's going to be a lot tougher than what Moura had when he was in against Ajax, because now you're probably thinking, well,
I mean, Tagliafico isn't bad. The thing with Moura against Ajax, it wasn't a case of he was running at the... He kind of drifted inside into those centre-back positions. He wasn't really touching Tagliafico at all. He was knocking... He was going in behind into that space.
Yeah.
And that's what Robertson's not going to cover. He's going to be taking Trippier out of the game, and then he's going to be drifting inside. So it's all whether your other centre-back, whether it be Gomez...
It would probably be Joel Matip, or... I don't think Gomez will probably play centre-half, so it'll probably be Matip or Lovren. But I would probably...
Lovren will not be able to deal with Moura's pace.
But it was probably going behind to be Matip for the game.
So when it's Matip up against Moura...
Hmm.
I'd say Moura has a bit of an advantage there. It's just all how Poch lines up his team. If he lines it up, make Kane the target man. Make Kane not, like, say, oh, he's going to be the danger man, he's going to be the danger man. Make sure Van Dijk marks him.
Yeah.
But then just make him drop deep all the time. Make him drop deep for these balls, so then the ball over the top goes towards Moura.
And that's the big question for Spurs, because unlike Liverpool... Liverpool sort of have one set formation that they sort of play in. These play either, or probably two really, they play either with the diamond or the 4-3-3. Spurs have almost, I mean, how many ways has Poch lined up Spurs this season? And he's been able to get it varying ways of quality and varying amounts of results.
Yeah, I think the silver lining from the amount of injuries we've had from different sets of players and different positions over the whole of the season, it's given Spurs the ability and the knowledge of what it's like to play in so many different types of formations with completely different groups of players, which kind of just mean their full strength starting 11 haven't really played much together. Yeah. But I think there's so much flexibility with Spurs, they'll be able to you know, switch up and change things and kind of work around what's going on.
Do you think then that, looking at the players that are now past fit for Spurs, will it be a sort of traditional sort of way that Spurs would line up with, or do you think that Poch may go for something a bit different? Do you think that the back five may return for this game, maybe, or do you think that he'll go for the flat back four?
I think he'll go back five.
Yeah
with the your wingers are too strong for just Rose and Trippier to deal with, or Rose and Ori to deal with. He'll go back five, make sure that Alderweireld and Vertonghen as sorted on those two. Just striker Firmino's a good player, but he's not going to be threatening the box too much.
I think you've perfectly led us onto the topic that we've wanted to talk about for the whole of the podcast. Kieran Trippier is somebody who is probably going to be able to play this game. And him against Sadio Mane has been something that Liverpool fans, I know that Jeremy Dunn and Joe Wilkinson, were licking their lips at the idea of. Sadio Mane has been in incredible form this season, being joint top goal scorer in the Premier League this year alongside Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Mohamed Salah. You must be thinking that there's going to have to be a lot more cover for Trippier to be able to deal with
the wingers. I think Alderweireld and Trippier, both of them, will mark Mane out of the game.
Yeah.
It's whether that space that's left in behind Alderweireld is exploited. It's the same thing with Kane. You'll probably mark Kane out of the game with Van Dijk, but it's whether you can deal with the space in behind Van Dijk. And I think that's going to be the biggest sort of contesting point, is who would exploit the space better, and what sort of maybe slightly lesser players will kind of come into the game. You're talking your Wijnaldums, who stood up against Barcelona. You're talking Eriksen, whether he can get some strikes away, or Moura, etc., when Kane is being marked out of the game. It is that contestation of who's going to use that space better.
Okay, so it's time for us to talk a little bit about starting 11s. I would probably think that you're probably all in agreement saying that Hugo Lloris is probably going to be playing this game, and you probably pick him.
Yeah.
So probably then you talk about what is going to be in the back four. Questions over Danny Rose. Maybe he can get himself into the side for this game, or maybe you could put somebody else in that position. Jan Vertonghen's made a very, very good case for him at left back.
The thing with Vertonghen at left back is then you have to either put Davies or Sanchez at centre back, which Sanchez is good in a three, but not as good as in a two. So if we're going for a back five, then I'd place Sanchez in the back three and maybe Vertonghen wide, Davies on the left hand side. If we're going for a back four, though, Rose has got to play.
Yeah.
He offers too much going forward.
Are you in agreement in the back?
Yeah, definitely. He's so quick up the left.
And then right back, it seems like you are very restricted in options. It seems as if Kieran Trippier is going to be the one who's playing in this game.
If it was my choice, it'd be Aurea.
My choice, we'd have Carl Norton back.
Just for Kyle Norton.
Bring me some Pascal Chimbonda.
Oh, beautiful player. Can't believe we lost him.
So now we're talking a little bit about midfield. There's a different ways that you can sort of set up your midfield, but are we saying that maybe a three is probably what we're
looking at? It'll probably be three, yeah. If we're going four at the back, it'll be 4-3-3.
And then you are probably then looking at Moussoko being playing in this game.
Moussoko, yeah.
Alongside Eriksen?
Eriksen, yeah.
Yeah.
Eriksen will play. And then it'll be between Winks, Dele, and Dyer.
Do you think that...
I'll have Dele.
You'd have Dele. Do you think that there is a question over whether Dele can play that role in the Champions League final, though, and maybe the likes of Eric Dyer or Winks is probably somebody that you could rely on more?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Sissoko will be your pivot, and then you'll have someone sitting in behind. Probably will be Dyer, because Winks isn't 100% fit. Dele will come on later in the game to try and annoy people.
You believe that Dele should be or will be dropped for the final?
I think Dele will be the impact player for the final.
Okay.
I think it's less of a dropping, more of a tactical move. Because you need that front three to stick together. You need Son, you need Moura, you need Kane or Llorente. If Kane doesn't start Dele. Put in a false nine like Firmino plays.
So if you are playing a back five, then you have then your three midfielders. So you're going to have to drop either one of Son, Kane, or...
If we're going back five, it'll be Eriksen, Sissoko, then the front three.
Oh, right, so then you would be playing 5-2-3. Right, okay. So either way, you would really want... are really bolstered.
That front three needs to play because it is our main threat.
Yeah.
So if it was five at the back, you'd have the five, then you'd have the two, and then you'd have Kane as the full striker in the cam role, and Son and Moura as kind of your inside forwards, more of strikers rather than wingers.
What do you think, Kieran?
I don't know. Maybe I'm disbelieving Llorente too much, and I think maybe there is a role for him up the top.
What, in this
start,
game?
To start with, yeah, maybe.
Especially, are you serious about
especially
that?
Especially if we... I'm just thinking, if we are going to be... If there are parts of the game where we can, you know, go down the wing, and if we are playing, you know, with five at the back, I'm just trying to think, you know, with Rose especially going up that left-hand side and the way he is able to cross the ball in quickly,
yeah,
is there the benefit of having a giant like Llorente stuck in the six-yard box?
I don't think this is the game for wingers. As you say, but Liverpool have got very good fullbacks. It is a case of we need to get our wide players inside,
yeah,
and really go at your kind of central players, because I feel like that is where you're weakest, is in the middle of the pitch.
So you don't think that there's a case for Llorente playing in this game?
I think Llorente coming on later in the game if we need him, yes. I don't think he should start. Van Dijk would eat him up.
Do you think that the front three, Kieran, should be playing for Spurs in Son, Kane and Mara in this final?
Thinking about it, it's probably the better option, but I think it's nice that we have that option to bring on. So yeah, I'll probably agree with that.
Okay, so it's time for us to talk a little bit about the worst part of the show for probably everyone who's done the podcast so far. It's score prediction time, and everyone hates this because it's a final and you can probably end up with egg on your face. So Henley, you've watched a lot of Spurs this season ticket holder. What are you thinking, score prediction for the final, Liverpool versus Tottenham?
Can I do two?
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a realistic and an optimistic.
Okay.
So my realistic, I think, will be 2-1 Liverpool. My optimistic is 2-1 Spurs.
As someone who's probably never done this before and probably never be asked to come back,
I think Tottenham.
No, I'm probably going to see be a very slow start from Spurs. We'll struggle in the first half and we'll very quickly go 1-0 down, and then we'll be 2-0 down by the just before half time. And I can see it ending up with a 3-2 win to Spurs, with Spurs winning in the 96th minute.
From Sissoko.
Or Llorente. I don't mind either one, but as long as it's those two. I'll go for those 3-2, and I'll put a tenner on it. Probably get 1,000 to 1, but that'd be worth it.
If that happens, I'm going to have to switch off my notifications on my phone, because I'll never want to speak to you ever again. Rightio, so that is the end of the Spurs build-up for the Champions League final. We're going to be back very, very soon, and we're going to be talking with both sets of fans, the Liverpool fans and Tottenham fans, in the same room for just about half an hour or so, talking about their feelings towards the final. We'll give them some quick fire questions and get their impressions while they're both in the same room, so don't go anywhere.
This is the View from the Stands Road to Madrid special on URN.